Stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome back to Administrative Static. Mark Chenoweth here with John Vecchione. And Vec, I wanted to start off today talking about a sort of big new case for the New Civil Liberties Alliance that we filed last week. We didn't get a chance to talk about this in last week's podcast, but or radio show. So let me jump right into that. The NCLA is representing another nonprofit group here in the Washington, D.C. area called the National Center for Public Policy Research in a lawsuit against the Securities and Exchange Commission over its approval recently of new board diversity rules for NASDAQ, and NASDAQ being one of the stock exchanges. And what these, so there's actually two rules in question. And So SEC approved these back on August 6th, and the rules require that listed companies must disclose information about their board members' self-identified gender, race, and sexual orientation, and either include on their board a quota of individuals of certain gender, race, and sexual identity, or they can publicly explain why the board does not meet such quotas. And then the second part of this is that NASDAQ is offering companies access to a list of diverse candidates who are supposedly board ready, who could meet the quotas. So you have government, essentially government approved board members to sit on these private corporations under the guise of diversity. And then the ultimate way that NASDAQ intends to enforce this new rule is to threaten to delist companies that don't abide by it. So if you want to be listed on our stock exchange, if you want folks to be able to buy your stock on NASDAQ, then you have to abide by our diversity rules, whether you want to or not. And the problem that NCLA has with this, or at least the administrative state problem that NCLA has with this set of affairs, Vec, is that the SEC doesn't have the power to do this. The Congress has never given the power to the Securities and Exchange Commission to govern how boards of directors are constituted. And as folks may know or may understand, most of the governance of boards of directors of private companies in the United States is done at the state level. This has been a traditional area of state law. It's why so many companies are registered and incorporated in Delaware, because Delaware has a particularly good and well-established and well-sorted out set of corporate governance rules. And even though it's the one of the smallest states in the country by size and population, this set of legal rules has attracted many of the largest companies in America to incorporate there. And the idea that the SEC would come in and try to impose some board diversity rules on top of the state laws in this area is really troubling. And so,
and Mark, yeah, go ahead. I should point out, California has passed a law that is light, that says you have to have this kind of diversity on the board, or you have to have a certain amount of women, certain amount of non-binary, all the rest of it. So, for instance, California is passing these laws, and what is this supposed to do about that? Are they follow on? Are they extra? If the states want to do this, they do have broad powers to regulate corporations. This is really out of line. And don't forget, Mark, it's also out of line because that's not what this institution was set up to do.
No, that's right. The purpose of the Securities and Exchange Commission is to protect investors from fraud and from other kinds of of problems like that. And there's nothing in this board diversity rule that suggests that having more diverse boards is going to somehow protect the investing public from fraud or other kinds of problems. That's not what's motivating this rule. So the purpose for which the SEC was set up, and by the way, the relevant statutes here are from the 1930s. The statutes that the SEC relies on for its organic power as an agency date back to the 1930s. So the idea that these statutes empowered the SEC to institute quotas for boards of directors based on diversity criteria is a pretty far-fetched idea, but it's the 1934 the Securities and Exchange Act, for example, is the one that empowers the SEC to regulate securities, to ensure honest markets, to enforce the fraud laws and punish people for violating those. But to misinterpret those, to reinterpret those, to allow the SEC to allow NASDAQ to sort of impose a quota or threaten delisting with anybody who doesn't meet this quota, that's just outside of the SEC's power to do that. So, as I say, joining with the National Center for Public Policy Research and our good friend Scott Shepard over at the NCPPR, who runs their Free Enterprise Project. And I should mention that the way that the Free Enterprise Project works at NCPPR, and not to speak for our client here, because they could do that for themselves, but they own shares in many NASDAQ listed companies. That's why they have standing to sue the SEC. NCLA would not have standing to sue on our own over this rule violation, and they but the NCPPR does, and so we have joined forces with them to bring this lawsuit. Now, I should say we are not the first folks to bring a lawsuit against this new SEC rule. Boyd and Gray and associates, Boyd and Gray being the former White House counsel to the first President Bush, his law firm, Litigation Boutique here in Washington, D.C., brought a lawsuit before we did. And they brought their lawsuit in the Fifth Circuit, a Court of Appeals. So even though we brought our lawsuit in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, because that's NCPPR, as I mentioned, Delaware. NCPPR is an organization that's incorporated in Delaware. So Delaware is covered by the Third Circuit. So we filed in the Third Circuit. But that case will be transferred and consolidated with the case in the Fifth Circuit that was already filed. And the reason for that is when rules like this, which can be challenged directly in a court of appeals, you don't have to go to the federal district court, a federal trial court first. You can challenge a rule like this directly in the court of appeals. There's a 10-day period after the first person files their challenge. And if anybody else files a challenge during that period, then there's a lottery to decide which of the various circuits that challenges were filed in will hear the case. But if 10 days pass and no one else has filed, then any subsequent cases are consolidated in the circuit where the first case was filed. So that's what's very likely to happen here. The Third Circuit will bounce our case over to the Fifth Circuit, and we will wind up being part of the same case that's already going on against the SEC over there. But Vec, I think it's important to recognize that the SEC is really outside the bounds of its remit from Congress here. And whatever one thinks about the diversity rules, that's really beside the point in one sense. The SEC could be imposing any rule via NASDAQ. Or maybe another way of saying that is if the SEC statute is so malleable, if it can be interpreted so flexibly that the SEC has the power to work with NASDAQ to impose this rule on boards of directors for NASDAQ listed companies, then what couldn't the SEC do in the way of imposing things on NASDAQ listed companies? It seems to me that there's no real limit.
And the fact of the matter is, words mean things and they don't mean other things. You can't, when you're given the power to regulate something, to stop fraud and to make sure that the markets are working functionally so as not to defraud the investor or injure the investor in some way, and to fix various problems in securities laws that lead to crashes and things. There is no nexus between this and that. And that's why it was set up. And that's why words matter. They do mean things and they don't mean other things. You can't just pick up your regulatory hammer and pound everything in the world like it was a nail just because you want to.
No, you can't. And you know, I think the other piece of that is that when you do that, then the SEC is taking its eye off the ball of the things that it's supposed to be going after. It's maybe it's more interesting or it's more woke to go after something like these board diversity rules. But I don't know if you've more current. But I don't know if you've noticed this, Vec. But the SEC hasn't been doing a great job of stopping force and fraud in the market. So the last decade or so, there have been a number of high profile fraudulent sorts of things that have happened. And one wonders if perhaps the SEC has been spending too much time on these on what I would view as sort of a detour away from its mission, and it needs to get back to focusing on the core areas of responsibility that it has, and not on things like this. But whether that's true or not as a policy matter, as a legal matter, it's certainly true that that there isn't the power to do this.
And
there's
Mark,
a second.
Mark, yeah. I just want to add something. One of the biggest scandals and securities disasters in this country over the last 10 years is Theranos, which was a very diverse board. In fact, she was on the cover of every magazine because she was a woman CEO doing these new things. And that led to blinding everybody and actually led to fraud.
That's a great point. And I don't want to let this issue go without pointing out one other problem with this rule, which is that it violates the First Amendment. It violates the due process and equal protection rights of other board members as well, potentially, who might be shut out here. But by compelling speech from these companies, by forcing them to explain why they don't meet the diversity requirements, this rule would also violate the First Amendment. So all kinds of reasons why this rule should be kicked to the curb. And hopefully the lawsuit in the Fifth Circuit will make that happen. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Administrative Static. It's John Vecchione, and I'm here with Mark. And one of the things, the themes that I've been talking about over the past few weeks is the press reportage on the Supreme Court and how it tries, or whether it tries or not, how it misrepresents the court and what it does to the public. And that's very important in our area. Administrative law often requires us to oppose things where we might like the policy, but as Mark was just saying, or whether we like it or not, the administrative agency doesn't have that power. And so the press doesn't ever want to separate what the policy is from who should have the powers to do it. They hate doing that. And so they set everything up that if the judge comes out one way or the other way, it's because he likes this policy rather than there are laws and their words mean things, like I always say.
Unless it's abortion, and then they're very careful to make that distinction all the time. Yes,
exactly.
Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry.
So, exactly. They're real good. And I actually have to say, so last week I talked about Judge Alito, and as an aside here, the fella who Justice Alito criticized in his Notre Dame speech about the reportage on the Texas abortion law wrote a big article in the Atlantic about how this shows how unjust Alito is because you criticize me. I'm a reporter. How can anyone criticize me? So I think he kind of proved his point. And I'm not going to go into it because I thought this was, I thought the whole thing was ridiculous. I thought Alito was right. And I think that Sirwar is wrong, but it does show that this is the guy who's bringing you or bringing a lot of people in the world what the court's doing. And you see how crazy the interpretations can be. And this week, so Katie Couric, and I have to say, I have been interviewed by Katie Couric when I was a young man.
I did not know that.
I was. And she has a beautiful smile and she's very sparkly in person. And I have nothing against Katie Couric, but I do She was not the big deal. She was a young reporter in D.C. and she asked me about Iran-Contra many years ago. But in any event,
I believe she's a graduate of Yorktown High School right over here from not far from where I live.
Yes, very close by. But so she has published an autobiography, a dishy autobiography, as they would say. And I have gotten my information, much of my information on this from where all Americans have to go to find out what's happening in their country, the Daily Mail.
Why is it that the British have such good coverage of American politics?
The way they write and the things they say, I do laugh. But this is an important issue because Justice Ginsburg was an icon for the left, and I think they're
still bemused by what's happening in the colonies. I think that's the general tone.
Exactly, that is the tone, certainly of the Daily Mail. So, so she was even advised by the president of ABC News at the time that she shouldn't. She didn't like comments that Ginsburg made about Colin Kaepernick and the taking a knee and flag burning and all this. She published an article, but because Ginsburg was such an icon, she felt that it would detract from the court and from what the press wanted to do with Ginsburg to report her real words.
Yeah, because she criticized Kaepernick.
Exactly. And David Brooks, of all people, said that maybe Justice Ginsburg didn't understand the question. Well, I got to tell you something. Justice Ginsburg at 83 understood the question. The idea that Justice Ginsburg, like she was slower in her old age, but she was never like a Justice Douglas or something who wasn't in her right wits. That's just outrageous to say that. I don't agree with her a lot of her opinions, but I never thought, especially in her early 80s, that she had lost mental acuity. I saw her many times. I saw her give talks at Georgetown and other places. She was not somebody who didn't understand the questioner. That's just an outrageous thing right there that Brooks says and that Katie Couric reports. But here's what she left out. So Ginsburg is talking about how we have to allow free expression, which I agree with in all this. And Couric reports that. But she says that protests against the flag and against this country show, quote, contempt for a government that has made it possible for their parents and grandparents to live a decent life. Completely inflammatory comments there, which they probably could not have lived in the places they came from. As they became older, they realized this was youthful folly. And that's why this is important. And she says, she then said, and she didn't put this in there either about Colin Kaepernick and some other things. She said, would I arrest them for doing it? No, I think it's dumb and disrespectful. I would have the same answer if you asked me about flag burning. I think it's a terrible thing to do, but I wouldn't lock a person up for doing it. I would point out how ridiculous it seems to me to do such an act. And you know who else had that opinion? Scalia had that opinion. And most justices have that opinion. It is a reasonable opinion to have. But in the reporter's view, the idea that she had distaste for flag burning was somehow a mark against her. I don't know about you, Mark, but I think overall that Americans, whatever their views on that or whether they protest or not, they want people in a position of authority, like a Supreme Court justice, not wanting the symbols of the country to burn down. I have to think that.
Yeah, and I think it's outrageous for Katie Couric to have buried this information 5 years ago when it would have been noteworthy and an important part of the conversation, of the national conversation, for people to know that Justice Ginsburg had a view of Colin Kaepernick that was the same as Donald Trump's view on this particular point, right? I mean, that would have been an interesting fact to know.
Yeah, although I think Trump said that he should be fired. She didn't say that. But here's the other thing. When Couric pushed further, asking if she believes the athletes are within their rights to exercise these actions, Ginsburg replied, yes, if they want to be stupid, there's no law that should be preventative. If they want to be arrogant, there's no law that prevents them from that. What I would do is strongly take issue with the point of view that they were expressing when they do that, she added. Now, think about this for a second. She is on the Supreme Court. She has come from, she was one of the first women to ever get there. She has been a big deal in the law for 40 years in this country by this time. You know, you might believe that she doesn't hate the country. I mean, that is something you can reasonably ascertain about every one of the justices, I would say. That I find this mystifying. And I think that after after our segments that we've had on Alito and on Thomas and on Breyer and the rest of them and Amy Coney Barrett, I think that this just reinforces it. So you've got this very, very powerful media figure. As Katie Kirk is on, you know, was host of a major show for a very long time. And she's not letting her audience see that, in fact, Justice Ginsburg is ruling for the Colin Kaepernicks of the world, although she doesn't agree with them, which is what we want people interpreting the law to do. I think everyone wants that. If you don't want that, you're kind of missing the boat of what we're doing.
Well, was it Churchill? I think this is a false attribution of the quote, but Churchill was the one who said, if you're not a liberal when you're young, you have no heart. And if you're not a conservative when you're old, you have no brain. Maybe yeah. Ginsburg finally got old enough that she got a little conservative on some of these issues.
Yeah. I don't think I actually think that she's part of the mid-century, what I'd call patriotic liberalism. Right.
Yeah. Well, she led the ACLU at the time, or at least the Women's Rights Project of the ACLU at a time when the ACLU believed in civil liberties, unlike today.
Exactly. So I do think that these were firmly held beliefs. And anyone who followed her career with any knowledge at all would not be surprised by this. And that it was. But people out there who are watching NBC in the morning like to see, you know, what recipe emeralds come up with or something. I mean, those people are not going to get in the little snippet of time they're actually seeing something about the Supreme Court. They're now going to get a view of what Justice Ginsburg think, that she's, you know, some real kind of radical up there who you know, thinks that running down the country is great. And she does that on her weekends. I mean, it's crazy talk, but that is the impression apparently that Kirk wanted to give. And I think it shows a couple of things. I think it shows that her target audience isn't perhaps who her real audience is. I mean, I don't think people, you know, the New York Times has a very they're aimed at a certain segment of the intelligentsia and the knowledge class that we'll talk about a little later, I think. But Katie Kirk has. Why people watch her, because she has a high what we call Q rating, right? She's very attractive type person. People like watching her and seeing her talk and all this sort of thing. And so a lot of people are watching her who aren't programmatically left wing or right wing. They just kind of like the way she is. And so her audience was millions and millions and millions of people. And that audience didn't get important information.
And why do you think she's bringing it out now?
Well, she has a book to sell and she's really dishing, boy. She's going. And also, I don't think she knew the effect of it. Like, although she does seem to say that, listen, I did this and she's sorry she did it, actually. So maybe this is sort of pro sua. I'm ruining the Latin, but basically an apologia for pro sua vita, apology for my life, right? She's going through everything. She's also settling scores. She's after Deborah Norville and take shots at Martha Stewart. And I mean, so I think that she's just decided to just let it all hang out and also to make a book that people are going to pick up because they're going to want to see all the controversies and stuff. So I think they will pick it up to go see the controversies. But I do think that if a major figure like Katie Kirk in the news and in the broadcast news, this is not like Serwer, who writes for God knows who, and no one ever heard his name. This is Katie Couric, who everybody knows. She's on the cover of People. She's on the cover of every magazine. You know, people follow her life. They know when her husband died. They know when she's off dating somebody. They know her. So I think it couldn't be more clear that the justices that we've talked about the last 4 weeks were right.